This is John Williams. I'm about to play back an interview I did. It's about 8 minutes. It's really good with Beth Kobliner. But before I do, let me just tell you something we'll talk about with you right afterwards. Do you know when you buy something, they offer you an insurance policy, extended warranty or service contracts on everything from any kind of consumer electronics these days to airline flights to vacation trips, college tuition? When you rent a car, they always try and sell you insurance. You can get insurance for your pet. Wedding insurance. If the wedding goes south, you can get insurance against all of these things. She said you and your kids should know which of these extended warranties or service contracts you should or should not buy. When your kids get a smartphone, do you pay the extra for a service contract on that?
A couple of our phones are insured, yes.
Yeah. I always struggle because sometimes they go, but we got a good deal here for you, John. You get it for $299. I go, that's great. And you really should get the extended warranty because this thing will almost surely break. You're going to break it on the way out of here. I swear to God, it's a piece of junk.
I think we get third-party insurance for the phone.
So should you buy insurance on that phone? She answers all of these in just a minute. I'm talking about Beth Kobliner, who wrote Make Your Kid a Money Genius, Even If You Are Not. She's the New York Times bestseller. She also wrote Get a Financial Life. She's one of these money gurus who gives you good advice.
If we're not supposed to, it was Sharon's idea.
I'm telling you, I'm always on the wrong end of these impulse buys, when I do and don't, it seems. So I'm glad that we'll run through some of them, all of those, in just a minute. But early in the book, she talks about Harold and Shirley, a couple of folks who were very wise with their money. And I asked her who they were.
Those are my parents, and they were both teachers. I grew up in Queens, very middle-class family. But they really stressed money values. My dad was born in 1929 during, you know, the Depression. And my mom was born 1929 as well. And they both were very good about being frugal and saving. And even though my dad was a teacher, then a principal, he was also great at investing. He put half of his salary in a retirement savings plan. Because back in the day, New York, you were allowed to put 50% of your salary into a retirement savings plan. And the famous story in our family, you know, some people know, oh, my parents met, how they fell in love. I remember, or I know the story about when my dad said, we're putting 50% of my salary in a retirement plan. And my mom said, we can't afford it. And my dad said, we can't afford not to. And that idea of, you know, 50 years later, they were retiring very comfortably and really were able to send us to college and able to do all the things because they made very good decisions when they were younger.
My dad was in the Air Force and was a counselor at a junior college, but always in the public sector, never got rich. Born the same year as your dad, and he and mom have two houses and three cars.
Exactly. I mean, it really was, you know, things were different, but people were very much clued into the idea. If you grew up in the Depression, like my dad's dad didn't hold a job for the whole Depression. So my dad, as a little boy, was thinking, okay, I want to get a stable job, and I want to, you know, be smart about this. And so he, you know, again, teacher, principal, doing his passion, you know. Young people talk about their passions. It was his passion. He loved kids. He loved teaching. But he also was smart about saving. And my mom would only shop on triple coupon day. You know, instead of getting 10% off, she'd wait till it's 30% off and then stock up on tuna fish and high C fruit punch because she can buy it in bulk and save money. And those dollars she saved went toward my and my brother's college educations. My brother went to dental school, and they helped him with that, too.
I don't know that my generation has been as good about money as they were.
No.
I don't know what's going to happen to our kids.
Right, right. And that really is the key. And the heart of my book is that a lot of parents say to me, you know, I was bad with money, so how am I going to teach my kids about money? And the fact is, you don't have to be a money genius to make your kid a money genius, which was why I called my book that. You know, you really need to understand some basics. And in my book, I go through what are the basic lessons, whether it comes to delayed gratification or, you know, investing in something smart for the long term, or, you know, opening a bank account. Those lessons that our kids don't see anymore because we're swiping credit cards and debit cards.
You like to use cash.
Yes.
Tell your kids to use cash.
Yes.
Why?
it's important to use cash because when you use cash, you experience what's called the pain of paying. When you fork over those dollars, when you buy something, it's painful. So we spend less with cash than we spend with credit cards and debit cards. I also think cash teaches numeracy, addition, subtraction. Kids learn how to make change.
You start with 14 tips. Which of them is most critical?
Delayed gratification. I think, you know, people think, oh, you have to be good in math to be good at money. You have to be good at waiting and teaching kids to wait and save up for something they want. And that sometimes means trade-off. We don't buy the snack every day, but we save up our money for the thing we want the most.
You talk about 14 tips, right. But then I really like that you said, here are seven things you don't need to tell your kids about money. You don't need to share your salary. You don't need to share which parent makes more,
right.
The amount in the 401k, how much you pay the babysitter, and especially don't make them worry about your worry about paying for their college.
Yes, that's an important one. It's good to talk to kids about college as early as ninth grade or even the end of eighth grade. It's a stressful topic these days, but talking about it de-stresses it. But don't tell them about your worries. Just say, we're in this together. We're going to come up with a plan, find a great school for you, but one that's affordable for us. You don't have to go in tons and tons of debt, but your kids probably will have to take out federal student loans. But having these conversations at the end of eighth, beginning of ninth grade is smart.
I'll get to some of those things that you talk about college, and I'm glad you do. This is not just a book for small children.
Mm-hmm.
This goes all the way through college and into early adulthood,
right.
Which is really good information.
Thank you. Ages 3 to 23.
When kids get a lot of money for graduation or a birthday or some milestone in their life, what should they do with the several hundred dollars they may have?
Right. Well, you can talk to your child about what are your goals for this. Maybe we could put some of it into savings. And I'm talking around the country to parents who are telling me we're having our young kids start putting a little bit money into a 529 plan for their college education. And research shows when kids feel like they have some skin in the game, they actually end up having slightly higher GPAs in college. So for little kids, you know, medium-sized kids, saving toward college a little bit is not a bad idea. And then maybe some money for spending and some money for giving. For little kids, it's better to give time than money because it's more meaningful for them. But as a family, if that's your values, putting a little bit toward some organization or charity your kid feels strongly about, it's a great idea.
And you recommend some in the book, Heifer International, et cetera.
Right, ones that allow you to give small amounts to get kind of a big gain.
You address just some things a lot of us have argued and maybe have not resolved. Mm-hmm. You have an opinion about, should I let my child move back in after college?
I think the reality of the economy right now, many, many more kids are moving back home after college. And I used to say that 20 years ago and kids would groan. Now kids are like, yep, I'm going to move back home because I have student loans that I need to pay off. If your kid moves back home, that's I think you should welcome them if the relationship's okay. But then say, look, you're home, but we're going to work towards some goals together. We're going to put it in writing. What are you trying to do? Are you trying to move out? Well, why don't we start saving toward that rent, that, you know, deposit? Or why don't we start talking about, you know, what are some of the things you can do at home to make yourself part of this family? Do you want your kid to pay a little bit of rent? Or is it just you know that your kid is paying off his debts and not spending the money or wasting the money? You know, I think these are conversations that are really important to have. And it sounds weird to say get it in writing, but I think writing really helps because it avoids any confusion or misunderstandings.
Or people feeling like they're being taken advantage of.
Yes, taken advantage of, or, oh, my parents are such a nag. If it's in writing and it sort of takes the emotion out of it and say, this is what we're going to do, and it's not punitive, it's more of a discussion between, frankly, when your kid graduates from college, theoretically, they're an adult.
But I think a lot of us worry that we are enabling the failure of our children to launch because we continue to coddle them.
Yeah.
So why are we letting the kids move back into their bedroom?
Because I do think the economic, you know, look, the median debt load of kids graduating from college is about $20,000. So right there, you're starting off with a burden that our generation didn't have, frankly. We had actually more credit card debt than young people do today, but we didn't have quite as much student loan debt. And I think that if you do this in a constructive way, as a parent and a young grown, you know, a grown child, you talk about how we're going to do this. I don't think it's enabling bad behavior. if you're setting up guidelines that you both agree to and it's working toward a goal. I think it's helping. I think it becomes enabling when you start looking the other way and your kid's, you know, 25 and they're sitting on the couch and they haven't gotten a job because they haven't found the perfect job. Just get a job. Just start to work.
You say the book's for 3 to 23. And again, I'm just glad you spend time with young adults or kids post high school. I think it's offensive the amount that college costs and the amount that parents and students borrow.
What's your
overriding advice about this?
I think it's gotten ridiculous. And I think that there's this fear now. You know, I talk to families of all income levels, families who have very little money, they're terrified. You know, I'm not going to even send my kid to college because we'll go into huge debt. Well, actually, research shows if you graduate from college, you will earn $1 million more over your lifetime than people who don't graduate from college. So it's really important for families to know there are lower cost alternatives. There are community colleges, city colleges that sort of lose, you know, attention in the hype. So I think parents have to think we're going to get federal student loans only. We're going to keep our kids to that. There's one rule of thumb. Don't have your kid borrow more than what their expected first year's salary is. So if you expect $30,000, don't borrow more than $30,000. Stick to federal student loans. And I think parents have to be really savvy, really good consumers. Just because a school is a quote-unquote private school, you know, it could be not better at all than your local public school or community college. And I feel very passionately about this because I've met parents who have scrimped and saved to send their kids to some private school that doesn't even have a good graduation rate.
That's Beth Koblinder, and her book is Make Your Kid a Money Genius. The full interview in our podcast, you'll be able to hear it all at the end of our show. Okay, in the book, she also talks about extended warranties and service contracts on all kinds of things. Let me tell you what she says you should do about that laptop or smartphone after this. So in this book, it says, okay, make your kid a money genius. Extended warranties or service contracts. Should you get it on appliances or vehicles?
A vehicle, maybe, yeah.
Okay, forget cars. Appliances. You just bought a washer or dryer. Bertrand, do you buy the extended warranty?
No.
She says, almost never. She says, these things are made pretty well. The manufacturer has a year on it, and they last for years beyond that. How about this? Trip cancellation insurance for flights, hotels, car rentals, if you're traveling with Steve Bertrand Travel. Should you get trip cancellation insurance?
Well, I strongly recommend it to people who travel with me.
She says, only for big trips.
Yeah, well, a European trip might be.
Overseas or a long stay, yes.
Because I never have, but having done this, honestly, I've run into people who've used it, who've needed it.
We always travel with it.
Do you?
Yeah, well, I'm going to be gone. I'm going to be in Barcelona Saturday.
What?
Oh, did I just drop that?
Right.
And so my luck, right? The most terrifying thing that could ever happen in an airplane just happened, and I'm about to spend 8 hours in one. We always get the insurance. You know, I mean, if we're in Europe and we got to come back here or whatever, yeah. But she said for long, only for big trips. How about this? She said pet insurance. Brenda and I are always going, we've got to get pet insurance. These stupid dogs.
What does she say?
Brenda's thinking we should, but here's what the expert says. Starting prices for dogs average $35 a month, cats about $25, plus the deductible. Older animals, hard to insure. And most well visits to your dog are not covered. Plus, so you end up paying a lot of the vet bills yourself. She doesn't like it. Laptop insurance. The cost of repairs of a laptop if you spill coffee on the keyboard or drop it. For many people, it's impossible to live without your laptop. So do you need it? It depends. If you set aside enough money for a repair or even a new computer, skip it. But if you're clumsy and if cash is tight, it's probably a good idea. On car rentals, when you rent a car, she said, do you need extra insurance? The answer is yes, but you may already have that coverage and not know it. If you own a car, your auto insurance policy probably covers the rental. That's been my case. I've always got it anyway.
What?
If I have, say, State Farm insurance.
You're covered.
On my car, if I rent a car, My car insurance will cover me for a rental.
But then did you say you get it anyway?
Well, I mean, but then I don't get the insurance.
Oh, okay.
Because I've already got it.
You got it anyway, I'm sorry.
And if you don't own a car but pay with a credit card, a lot of credit cards will automatically cover you, so you don't need the insurance. What did she say about smartphones? Skip it. Only 1 in 5 people surveyed by Consumer Reports needs to replace a lost, broken, or stolen phone.
Yeah, and 2 of them live in my house.
I'm telling you, I have used it 5 times. It's been worth it for me. I get it, and I hate it, but I get it, and it's always paid off. She doesn't think you need it. It's 158. She is Beth Koblinder. Make your kid a money genius.